5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, fear of missing out, Sachs. Ethan, there has been so much happening this weekend in Magic the Gathering Las Vegas, and I have been stuck at marching band just staring at my phone during the downtime, wishing I were in Vegas.
Yeah, a lot. Like, we have like three lines at the top of our show notes of like big news drops that happened this weekend. And I feel like that's going to take a bulk of the discussions for this episode. Just so much happening. Does it make you like, are you really like, oh, I'm definitely locked for Vegas next year? Don't want to miss a thing.
I'm 100% locked. I was 100% locked when they announced the date. But the way I felt this weekend was like, I don't want to miss this ever again, is how I was feeling. This weekend, like, I don't like this feeling.
yeah, for sure. Very exciting. We're recording on Sunday morning here before Worlds Top 8. There was a 2-day sealed 100K that happened. Pretty crazy to see so many people do back to back. You see Mengu top 8ed back to back the 100Ks in Vegas.
Yeah, Matt Nass also back on the PT. Oh, Alex was crushing and almost top 8ed again. He finished X and 3.
Which I think was the same that happened to him last year, too. He, like, just missed out on top 8 last year. So, I mean, yeah, just people who crush Limited, crushing Limited, more at 11, I guess. But, like, yeah, a lot of awesome stuff happening. Plus Worlds, Kai Buda top 8ing Worlds, maybe another World Championship.
Could you imagine repeating as World Champion two cards with your name and image and likeness on them?
Well, three of the top 8 are, I mean, everyone will know what happened by the time this listens, so our excitement is probably silly, but three of the top 8 competitors have the chance to be repeat. Plus, who's it, Marcio Carvalho has been runner up twice before. Like, so crazy. So many people just consistently putting up results at the highest stage. It's hard to not get excited. What's the line in Moneyball? How can you not be romantic about baseball? How can you not be romantic about Magic, you know?
I mean, you'll love to see it. Here's how you cannot be romantic about Magic the Gathering. When it turns into Magic the Gathering Spider-Man and Magic the Gathering SpongeBob.
All right. So I guess we're going to get into this. They announced the Universes Beyond becoming standard legal, and it'll be half of the sets moving forward, or at least in 2025, until people revolt. Ben, tell me why you're mad, and then I'll tell you why you're wrong.
It's not that I'm mad. It's like, I'm bummed. And I know that feels gatekeepery or whatever, but I love this game. And I've loved this game since I was a little kid. And like, the Lord of the Rings things made sense. Like, those are both high fantasy whatevers. And I initially thought, I'm not going to like this. And it was fine. And I probably will experience the same thing with Magic the Gathering SpongeBob, because magic is magic and magic is great. But my initial gut reaction to seeing the game that I love talking to you about every week, it feels like it's cheapening itself in some ways.
It literally is selling out, right? Like,
selling out, but also making it more expensive to play because they're paying money for these IPs and the prices of the booster packs are going up, whatever. I just don't love it. It feels like Magic's got enough worlds of its own to go to. And I guess this is going to bring new people into the game. New people coming into the game is great. But I just worry about Magic losing its identity.
I'm curious about, they would never share metrics, much like Netflix will never, like, it'll be like, it's the number one show in the country. And you're like, who's actually watching this? Wizards will never release, you know, the actual data, but I'd be curious to know, like, how many people who are fans of SpongeBob are going to start playing Magic in any serious sense because
of Magic the Gathering,
of Magic SpongeBob. Like, I'm not, that doesn't make any sense to me personally, but I'm kind of an enigma. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't quite, I'm just sort of waiting for some IP that I actually, like, give me, like, Universes Beyond Super Mario Brothers or Mega Man. Like, give me something that I actually, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Give me something I care about. Because, like, so far, I'm like, none of this is really singing for me. But when they do finally do that, I feel like I'll be excited. And as long as it, like, the fact that they're just sort of actually owning up to, hey, it's six releases. Like, there were six releases this year for folks who are going to feeling like, oh, my God, that's overwhelming. There were four standard sets, Modern Horizons 3, plus Foundations coming up. Plus, there's going to be actual, it has been announced, Pioneer Masters is coming in a month. So that's seven sets that we'll be having to review on the show. And I say bring it on. That makes my life easier, I feel like. Like, because if the set's a dud, then we're moving on quickly. And if the set's awesome, great. We're going to run out of, or have no shortage of things to discuss. So I don't know. I feel like it's, I get all the hubbub, but it feels a little bit like what you said. Like, not gatekeepy, but like, I don't quite know why it changes things, other than you just feeling like, well, now, instead of casting Soarin', I'm casting SpongeBob, and that's dumb. It's like, casting Soarin' is dumb. Sorry.
No, casting Soarin' was cool. That's what I mean. Like, that IP fit into, it was a more natural fit. It didn't feel quite so shoehorned in. I don't know. I'm sure it will be fine when we get to it. To be clear,
I was saying Soarin', like S-O-R-I-N, not Sauron.
Oh, yeah, okay.
This is like the IP was Magic IP that I was referring to.
I heard Sauron.
Got Lord of the Rings on the brain.
I think I conflated the two names. Yeah, those are my thoughts on Universes Beyond. I'm not angry about it. It was just like, difference, change. You know, I hate change.
I know you hate change, but it's coming. Much like the blocking rules change that was announced this week as well. So now, basically, for folks who don't know, there's like, it used to be, blockers were assigned, and if there were multiple blockers on an attacker, at that point, you would order those blockers as the attacker, and then there was a step where you could cast instants, whatever, tricks, removal spells, etc. That's gone. Blocking, ordering happens at damage now. What do you think? Thoughts? Questions, well, comments, concerns?
Yeah. So this favors, I was thinking through it, I was driving home from band, like trying to make sure I understood exactly what was going to happen, and so previously, stuff favored the blocker because you had to order pre-damage, and then if you ordered wrong, the blocker could do something sneaky to surprise you. That is that is no longer the case. So this favors people who like beating down. This favors the red-white players of the universe.
Yeah, this is it. This just makes, I mean, it was never really good to be using your pump spells on blocks anyway, but sometimes you could blow people out, right? You block their, whatever, their 4-4 with your 2-3-3s, and then whichever 3-3 they put first, you played a giant growth on it and then saved both your creatures, killed theirs. You can no longer do that because you play giant growth before damage and then they say, okay, fine, I'll kill the other one instead. So I think it's like that situation doesn't come up that much. I do think limited players are suffering the most from this. Like, I feel like this is where that comes up the most. And I think this is probably a net negative rule change in the sense of like, I just think like, giving more agency to the attacker in that sense, like there's already enough agency given to attackers in limited, like can the blockers have something for once? And it feels like we're just picking on them again, but I feel like it's not going to come up that much. Like it already didn't come up that much, but I don't love this as a change personally.
I do like it. That's interesting. We're on opposite sides of the coin here. I think this just cleans up the game. Like that just feels like niche and corner casey and rules lawyery. This just feels more natural to me.
It definitely feels better for paper. Like that whole thing of like, okay, I block with these, and then you're like, what order is it? It's like, okay, yes, sure, I have to do that now, when like most of the time me doing it now versus me doing it in 2 seconds is the same thing. So I agree with that. But online, like, I don't know, it's fine. Like I said, not going to come up that much. Like this is a extremely small ball rules change. Let's chat real quick about the Patreon page, and then let's get into our World's Draft prep thoughts. patreon.com/lordslimited. It's where folks can go to give back to the show. We've got some great perks. Episode 400 is right around the corner. That's our, we're doing an all musical episode, right? Ben, you wrote a whole score for us.
And you nailed it. I'm on clarinet. You're on vocals. It's going to be hip.
So make sure you unsubscribe before that episode drops. But no, we have some cool perks rolling around for episode 400. You'll see, I'll tease it here. You're going to see a little bonus episode dropped in your podcast feed later on in the week. And that's part of our changes for episode 400. And that's all via the Patreon and all because of our wonderful support via the Patreon. And what we like to give back to our patrons is access to the Discord. It's hopping, it's popping, 24/7 limited tech support. I was watching Simon Nielsen's draft live on coverage and in the watch party channel of our Discord, just chatting with people about picks. I mean, it's pack one, pick one is kind of wild. Excited to talk to you about that. You and I have not talked about any of these drafts yet, but the watch party is great. Just getting to like cheer people on. We had someone, it's been so long since we recorded because we recorded early for me being at KubeCon, but we had someone in our Discord who's in the hero tier section who qualified for Arena Championships, and you helped them out with their day two sealed deck. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah. So that's very exciting. So getting to cheer people on there, getting to cheer people on during the Arena Open. And so that's what we get to do. We get to cheer people on, but you get to reap the benefits of a community of like-minded, limited individuals. We want to shout out our patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Joseph, Alexander, and Mason. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah. Cannot say thank you enough.
So we thought before diving into the world's draft reviews that we're going to be doing today is that we do something that we did once, got good feedback on, and then didn't quite ever stick the landing on it again, but doing some like world's prep thoughts, like coming in with some, not doing like a full, you know, pack one, pick one tier list thing that testing teams do, but like a mini testing team meeting here where we've got some ideas of some card rankings that we would come into and maybe just some general thoughts about how we might want to zag if everybody at Worlds is zigging. So Ben, the floor, sir, what would you do if you're sitting down at the highest stage in Magic?
So I think we're coming to this with lists, separate lists. We've got 10 uncommons ranked 1 through 10 and 5 commons 1 through 5 as a nod to the new world order of uncommons mattering more than commons. And then where our top common fits in those uncommon rankings, as well as just for fun, a cool rare or a spicy rare that you would take over all of your top uncommons.
I already know what your answer is, but and I think our listeners do too, but I'm glad that you have an opportunity to talk about that card once again.
To wax poetic about Cursed Recording. I love that card. Yeah, that is my rare. Mostly just an excuse to talk about that, but I do think that's an underappreciated or maybe underutilized card power level wise.
Not by the reigning world champ, John Emmanuel Duprat, though.
He got there on day one, didn't he?
He did, yeah. 3-0'd with a Mar-Dudu deck that had Cursed Recording, and he hard cast Val'Gavoth on camera. That was pretty sweet to see.
Wow, I did not see that.
Yeah, very, very cool. Sorry. So back to, yes, thank you for laying out what we're doing today. Did you have any like general thoughts otherwise about like, I don't know, colors you might want to favor or strategies you might want to favor or avoid?
Well, I tried to reflect that in my tier list order. I mean, it's similar for me still. I think currently I would want to draft white the least just because I feel like it gives you the least amount of agency. Like it feels like high rolling, trying to high roll a little bit more, because if you get a great white blue or a great white red deck, like you're going to be in great shape. But if you get pushed into white green or white black, I'd be a little nervous about that white black, less so than white green. But I basically do not want to play white green in the format.
Yeah, that's why Simon's pack one pick one is so interesting. I can't wait to talk to you about it. And something that's notable about my top 10 uncommon list, I do not have Optimistic Scavenger on that list. While I do think it probably exists among the top 10 best uncommons in the set, it is a card that I'm like, is this really what I want to be doing? It feels so like, I don't know, all in dealer or secret gold card type deal.
Yeah, I think it's a gold card, and I think where you put the gold cards is interesting for that top uncommon list and how willing you are to, you know, go aggressively after the good gold cards, because there are a lot of good gold cards. I think that's an interesting discussion that'll come through seeing our lists here. But also, I do still, I mean, red and green seem like the two poles of the format to me a bit, but blue kind of tying the rim together in the middle. Like, if I were to update my color power rankings, I think it would be red, green, blue, black, white for me. And not that white's not powerful, but that's the order I want to start in them in the draft. Right.
We got an interesting question in the Discord. Someone was saying, like, you said that you didn't like white because it only leads to white, blue, or white, red as decks you're happy with. But then you talked about black saying you're happy with all the black decks, which I like agree that is confusing as a sentiment, because then you're like, wait, but it sounds like then you're happy about black, white. But I am happy about black, white. And I'm thinking about that as a I'm starting the draft black. And I feel like a black, white deck that is base black is going to be a lot stronger than a black, white deck that is base white, if that makes sense. Like the cards that black has a lot of inherent synergy and then can pull the things that white adds to it. Whereas vice versa, I don't feel like white can sort of tie that room together.
Right. White doesn't start you down a black, white path. White starts you down an aggressive path. White's best cards are all aggressive and belong in the white, red, and white blue decks.
Well, why don't we do top commons first? Because I feel like that'll be a shorter conversation. And then I think top uncommons will be really where the meat of the discussion is.
All right. So counting down from number one. Number one common for me is Scorching Dragonfire. One in red, instant, deal three. If the creature would die this turn, exile it instead.
Yep, that's my number one as well. Yep.
Okay, so I think pretty clear there, but very interesting where Scorching Dragonfire slots in your top uncommon list, if at all. And
that is interesting that you said if at all. I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
And then number two for me, this is where it gets a little wonky. It's really hard after Scorching Dragonfire. Scorching Dragonfire feels like a clear number one. I went back and forth on the order of 2, 3, 4, and 5 for forever. So
my guess is that 2, 3, 4, and 5, like we may have one card difference, but they're going to largely be similar cards, but the order is kind of up for debate. I feel like maybe that's a bold claim. I don't know. Maybe you're going to come with some hotness.
I'm not even confident we're going to have the same cards. Number two, I ended up with Unable to Scream, which is the blue swords to Plowshares.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Spineseeker Centipede. It's the 2/1 that can search up a basic land. Number four, Final Vengeance. The black sorcery is an additional cost, sack a creature and enchantment, and then exile target creature for a single black, which is just incredible. And then in the number five slot, I put Glimmerlight, which is the artifact, the 2-mana artifact that makes a 1/1 and has the equip cost to give a creature +1/+1 for 1 mana.
So Unable to Scream. I mean, I feel like you're reflecting the color rankings that you said as well in this a little bit, right? Where you were saying you felt like sort of teamer at the front for you and then black and white. And so you're giving Dragonfire, Unable to Scream, Centipede, top billing, Final Vengeance fourth, Glimmerlight over the card that I have on my list that you don't. And I have, we do have overlap otherwise. Over Trapped in the Screen is your hot take.
I don't think that's that hot.
It's hot. It's hot.
It's hot?
It's hot. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad or wrong. This is a judgment-free zone in this respect, but it's a hot take to leave Trapped in the Screen out of your top five commons you'd be happy taking at Worlds. Trapped in the Screen is an excellent removal spell and eminently splashable.
But the decks that want to splash don't want to splash white that much. Could you splash Trapped in the Screen? For sure. But if you end up base green, you typically want to end up in Rug or Sultai.
Yeah, but also Abzan is great too, I think. I think green, black, splash, white is totally reasonable. And I just think removal is such a premium. And removal that hits anything, and plus the ward too is relevant. Like removal in these kinds of drafts, which are going to be a little lower powered, a little scrappier because everybody knows what's up, I think Trapped in the Screen still has to kind of get a nod. Again, I'm fine with your Glimmerlight take. You're basically saying, I don't want to draft white at Worlds at this with that, I feel like.
Well, certainly not for a Trapped in the Screen. Like, okay. I don't want that to be the card that pushes me into white yet. Will I be thrilled to pick Trapped in the Screen over Glimmerlight once I'm white? Yes. This is back to your point about commons not mattering anymore. Like, you're correct. Never first picking Glimmerlight.
That is correct. Yeah, that would have to be just the worst pack. Yeah. So my list is Dragonfire 1, Final Vengeance 2, Unable to Scream 3, Trapped in the Screen 4, Spineseeker Centipede 5, and I gave an honorable mention to Terramorphic Expanse. Over Glimmerlight, just as I think a nod to expecting my deck to be a little scrappier and wanting to open up the option to splash those single pipped removal spells.
Yeah, my other, I also had Evolving Wilds as an OLI. Is it not Evolving Wilds in this format?
It is actually not. Expanse? It's not Evolving Wilds. Welcome to Duskmourn. It's Terramorphic Expanse. Thank you for playing.
I could not have answered that question. Like, if you told me my life was on the line, like life or death, which one's in the
you
format?
You would have died. You thought it was Evolving Wilds.
No, I just would have had a 50-50 shot, and Evolving Wilds would have been the name that came to mind. Because I don't think about it as Terramorphic Expanse ever.
Oh, to have a 24-hour stint inside your brain just to see what's going on up there.
The other two OLIs I had were Glasswork Shattered Yard, the red enchantment deal four, and then Glimmer Burst. I kind of felt like I should try to get Glimmer Burst in my top five. The three and blue instant speed, draw two cards, make a 1/1. That was tough for me to leave out. I went back and forth on that, putting that versus Glimmer Light in the common slot. And I do think Glimmer Burst is a higher power level card, but Glimmer Light also just fit, being a two drop that you can play in any deck is, are you happy to play it on turn two? No, but like you need some twos. It's not the saddest thing in the world.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good shout. I like that. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Did you know traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat, which can lead to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses? Plus, it's just plain gross. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require three times less laundry.
Miracle Made sheets are inspired by NASA and use silver-infused fabrics that are temperature regulating so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long.
The weather has turned. We're in peak fall here in Pittsburgh. That means one night we've got the heat on, the next we've got the windows open, the next they're closed again. But Miracle Made's temperature regulating sheets are keeping me cozy no matter what.
Miracle Made sheets are luxuriously comfortable without the high price tag of other luxury brands and feel as nice, if not nicer, than sheets used by some five-star hotels.
Go to trymiracle.com/LOL to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%.
And if you use our promo code LOL at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. If you aren't 100% satisfied, Miracle has a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/LOL and use code LOL to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off.
Again, that's trymiracle.com/LOL to treat yourself. And now, back to the show.
Okay, top uncommons. How do we want to do this? One person does their list?
I think we should go one person go through their list completely, and then the other person, if that card is in their list, they should say, yeah, that's in my list. It's number blank on my list.
Great. Okay. You're up.
I'm up. All right. Number one uncommon in Duskmourn, Unnerving Grasp. This is 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Manifest Dread, make a 2/2, and then you can return target permanent to its owner's hand. Target non-land permanent to its owner's hand.
That's on my list. That's number 4 on my list.
Ooh, I like it. Okay. I have just been wildly impressed with this card. And Blue's uncommons have just been incredible. And I think this letting you leverage tempo in the games that go longer, like where somebody doesn't just get steamrolled by blue-white or white-red. And this is also insane in blue-white, by the way. But the games where somebody doesn't just get steamrolled, getting to interact with your opponent's 4, 5, or 6 drop that just doesn't do much the turn that they play it, like their 7/6 trample or their 5/5 menace thing, like that's just game winning when you cast Unnerving Grasp in that spot. And I've been crazy impressed with it.
And there's non-zero amount of synergistic cards with this as well in terms of manifest. And so like that also adds a layer, like it's that plus plus, you know, it's really good.
Well, and the other thing that this and my number 2 card on this list is Under the Skin, the 2 and a green, Manifest Dread, return a permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. The other thing that both of these cards do is sorcery is kind of a weirdly hard type to get in some Delirium decks. So these plus binning a thing, plus when the card that you hit dies, like oftentimes you can get 3 types in the yard pretty trivially easy on what is a card that is powerful. Like it's not like you're having to put, you know, a 2/2 teddy bear in your deck that you don't really want to play to try to get Delirium. These are great cards that give you a kind of underappreciated type while also really speeding you up to Delirium.
Under the Skin is on my list as well, and it's also number 2.
Ooh, interesting. I want to know what your number one is so badly now. We're gonna hit it, right?
I'm a sheeple. You know what my number one is.
Oh, your number one is Disturbing Mirth.
No. That's not a sheeple pick. We're blowing it. Just keep going. You keep going.
Okay. Number three for me, Fear of Isolation, the white blue 2/3 flying enchantment creature. Whenever it enters the battlefield, you can return. You have to pick up. But you can. You have the option to pick up another creature or enchantment. That card has been crazy impressive as far as a value engine. And again, under two types on a creature, can reset things that are under enchantment removal, can pick up rooms. It's not a two drop. Like, you want to think about it as a four or a five drop or a double spelling. Like, it doesn't count towards your curve, but it is crazy powerful.
Fear of Isolation is also on my list. It is number five.
Number five. Okay. Number four for me. This is where my first gold card making an appearance. Making an appearance early. This is Brood Spinner, black green for the 2/3 ETBs, surveil 2, and then you can pay 6 to crack it to make always 6/1/1 flying instance.
Yes. Yes. No matter where you are or what deck it's in, it's making 6/1/1s. Brood Spinner is also on my list. It's number 8.
Okay. And
four for four in overlap here.
Did you look at 17 lands for yours?
I actually didn't.
I also did not look at 17 lands for mine. Yeah. Did not open it. So I didn't want to be infected by the sheeple thought.
Yeah. It was already wormed into me for my number one, so don't you worry.
So Brood Spinner for me, I have some gold cards here that are green because I think the green ones are much less committing than the others. I think this is basically a mono-colored card for me. Like, if I end up green, if I take Brood Spinner, I'm gonna try pretty hard to end up base green. And then whether or not I end up pairing black with it, Brood Spinner is going to make my deck with some mana fixing, ideally.
Yeah, I like it.
So similar thought, number five, Oblivious Bookworm. If you told me at the start of the format I've had Brood Spinner above Oblivious Bookworm, I'd have told you were crazy. But I do think I've been more impressed with the Spider. The Spider is a similar amount of value almost, but a better win condition than the Bookworm,
right.
I think.
Yeah. And dare I say, am I allowed to say, in a better deck? Also, like black green better than blue green.
They're just similar to me. It's all okay. all that delirium stuff is soupy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oblivious Bookworm is on my list as well. It's number 10.
Wow. Okay. So we got Brood Spinner, Bookworm, and then number six, first black card making an appearance, Osseous Stick Twister, one in a black for the 2/2 lifelink, artifact creature, and if you've got delirium, it drains and gains at the end of the turn if your opponent doesn't discard a card or sack a permanent.
We've come to our first card that is not on my list.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And you love green black. How is this not on your list?
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Love Osseous Stick Twister. I have huge respect for that card. Number seven, Sheltered by Ghosts. One and a white for the aura. Gives your creature ward 2 and lifelink. And whenever it enters, you yoink something off the opponent's side of the battlefield until your creature leaves the battlefield.
Sheltered by Ghosts is on my list, and it is number one.
Oh, get out of here. That's so boring.
That's what I said. It's a sheeple pick. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Sheltered by Ghosts, it's a good card. This is too much of a zag for me to be like,
am I really going to, like, I just couldn't really see myself. It felt like I was leveling myself to not take that as the best uncommon, personally.
I didn't know that it was, is it noticeably that high in the 17 lands power rankings?
I haven't looked in a long time. It was. It's so powerful.
It's really good.
It's so powerful.
It's a really good card, but I think for me, I would be resistant to drafting. I think that's why it's lower on my list, because like if I start with it or I start with Optimistic Scavenger, which is number 8 on my list, by the way. So those two back to back, they're 7 and 8, because I had to make myself think pretty long and hard about what I would do, pack one, pick one. I think I would take both of those over some of the other cards on my list, pack one, pick one, if push came to shove, but they're lower than those other six cards, because if I start Sheltered by Ghosts and then have the opportunity to take Brood Spinner, like, I'm taking Brood Spinner and jumping ship. Like, I don't want to draft white. And so, like, I should just lean into not wanting to draft white, I think, given the opportunity. I would, faced with any of those other six cards versus Sheltered by Ghosts, maybe I'm taking a hit and win percentage, like, in theory, but I think for me, for the way I want to draft the format, it's a better choice for me to take those other six cards over Sheltered by Ghosts.
Yeah, I buy it.
So Sheltered by Ghosts 7, Optimistic Scavenger 8. Did that make the cut for you?
Not on my list.
not on your list. Interesting that Shelter by Ghost is that high, but then you didn't put Optimistic Scavenger in there.
I feel like Sheltered by Ghosts, like Optimistic Scavenger is, in my mind, blue-white. Can it be good in red-white? Yes. Can you make it work in black-white? Probably. Probably can't make it work in green-white. So, like, it's effectively, in my mind, a blue-white-gold card, whereas Sheltered by Ghosts, like, is just going in any white aggressive deck, and any deck that I start drafting a Sheltered by Ghosts in is going to lean that way. And so I just don't feel like I have to jump through hoops. That was sort of my reasoning about like not putting any other white cards in my uncommon list. Spoiler, then Sheltered by Ghosts was just like, I know how to make this card work, and I know it's not going to ask a lot of me. I don't want to put myself in a spot where I'm like what you said, like taking something like Optimistic Scavenger and then being like, ooh, Brood Spinner. Like, you know, I don't want to have to, and certainly I would make that pick if there was nothing else good in the pack, but, you know, Sheltered by Ghosts, I feel like, gives me a clearer direction.
That's fair. Number 9 for me, Gremlin Tamer, the first non-green gold card. This is the blue-white 2/2 with Eerie that poops out 1/1s. And here, post-Gremlin Tamer, is where I would slot in Scorching Dragonfire on my top uncommon
list. Wow.
I think I would take all 9 of those other cards over Scorching Dragonfire.
Interesting. Okay. And then what's your number 10?
My number 10 is Patchwork Beastie. That's where I drew the line for I would not take that over Scorching Dragonfire. That's a single green 3/3 artifact creature. At the beginning of your upkeep, you have the option to mill. And then when you hit Delirium, it can start attacking or blocking. And then my honorable mention here is Disturbing Mirth. I think faced between that and Scorching Dragonfire, pack one, pick one, I think I would take Scorching Dragonfire over it. I had it higher on the list, and then when I started, my list changed quite a bit after I thought, okay, pack one, pick one, Scorching Dragonfire versus this card, what am I taking? And that was where I really started to dial in on the list for myself.
Yeah, my list is a little, your list is better. Your list is better. But I've got some cards that I'd like to talk about. Disturbing Mirth is on my list. You said that was your honorable mention.
Yeah.
Okay, so my list is number 1, Sheltered by Ghosts, number 2, Under the Skin, number 3, Painter's Studio Defaced Gallery.
Ooh, not on my list at all. That didn't even make my outside looking in.
I know. This is probably a hot take, probably doesn't belong this high up in the list. I think this card is extremely powerful, and I love it in any red deck, and I do feel like I am the most comfortable drafting red decks in the format, like... That's why Scorching Dragonfire is my number 1. Painter Studio versus Scorching Dragonfire, like, I should probably take Dragonfire over it just based on what I feel like is important at a draft of this caliber is having an interaction that's cheap and premium like Dragonfire and Exiles. But I have it a little lower in this list right now, so bear with me. So then I have Unnerving Grasp number 4. The Bounce Spell, Fear of Isolation number 5, the blue flyer that picks up an enchantment, or a permanent rather. And then there is where I would slot in Dragonfire after number 5. Below that, I have 2 removal spells, Nowhere to Run, the black enchantment, -3/-3.
Okay.
And Betrayer's Bargain, the 4 mana deal 5, or 2 mana plus sack something, deal 5, exile it. And then I have my gold cards, Brood Spinner, Disturbing Mirth, Oblivious Bookworm. I just felt like when push came to shove, like you said, like really trying to think, all right, pack one, pick one, what am I doing? Yeah, Brood Spinner has a higher ceiling for sure than something like Scorching Dragonfire, than these single colored interactive spells. But I think those are as important and then more likely to make my deck or more likely to make my draft navigation just slightly easier that I didn't want to put the gold cards super high on this list.
I feel like you're giving up a little bit by not taking, you really wouldn't take Brood Spinner over Scorching Dragonfire, pack one, pick one. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Like in a normal draft, sure. At Worlds, I think like, and it's unfortunate. I didn't, you know, I was watching Worlds yesterday and I was like, oh man, I haven't really done any like single limbs. And then I went to see if they were firing on Magic Online. And of course they weren't, because anyone who was playing in them was at the Worlds.
Interested in the Worlds, yeah.
And so I know that like those environments do feel slightly differently from doing so many of them leading up to prepping for PT Chicago. So I'm just sort of like trying to carry over some of that feeling of like, and maybe these gold cards are built different, et cetera. Like I said, I like your list and reasoning a little bit more, but I do think there's something to be said for the like identifying what the monocolored interactive spells are that you just got to take.
So one thing I would push back on about Nowhere to Run and Betrayer's Bargain. So the way I did this was I went on Scryfall and I just listed every common I thought uncommon and uncommon I thought might be in consideration for the list. And then looked at those cards and then dialed in on 1 through 10. So I just left the cards that didn't make my list. And Nowhere to Run and Betrayer's Bargain are both outside looking in for me. Mm-hmm. My thought process was red and black both get so much good removal that I think it is a bit less of a priority for those colors. Like, you're going to end up with Final Vengeances or, worst case scenario, Murders or Glasswork Shattered Yard. Like, you're not going to be in a spot of your black and red where you don't end up with stuff. And both Scorching Dragonfire and Final Vengeance at common fit the exile bill. I don't think Nowhere to Run and Betrayer's Bargain are quite that much of a premium because of the cards they're surrounded by in their colors.
I buy that. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So I just want to run through the other cards that didn't make the cut for me real mm-hmm. quick. So Bottomless Pool, Locker Room, that's the single blue bounce spell. And then Locker Room is the 5 mana. If one of your creatures hits them, you get a draw card. I feel like this card's a bit underappreciated at the moment, or that I seem higher on it than most people. I think this card is premium in any blue deck. Just the single blue bounce part, that's an enchantment, you're already interested in. And then Locker Room, your opponent just has to be constantly worrying about when you might unlock it.
Yeah.
Once it's sitting on the battlefield without you actually having to spend the 5 mana to unlock it. It's a very cool threat of looming over your opponent. I really like that. Stay Hidden, Stay Silent was in contention for me. Also didn't quite make the cut. I had that one initially on there. And then really? I finally decided I would take Scorching Dragonfire over it, pack one, pick one. And then that kind of bumped it out of consideration for me.
Stay Silent is fine to me. I've gone significantly lower on it. Like, I think Unable to Scream is better than it.
It's close. They're similar cards. Wouldn't shock me or surprise me. Yeah, I could buy that. And then Threats Around Every Corner, I initially had on the list. That's the 4-mana enchantment that lets you manifest. And when you manifest, you get to search up a basic. That was initially on there. But then I think I would pick Scorching Dragonfire over that. Pack one, pick one. And again, that pushed it lower on my list, pushed it out of contention. Break Down the Door, that's the 2 and a green instant speed, exile an artifact or an enchantment, and then Manifest Dread. That I got some eyes there for those of you who are audio listeners.
You said Painter's Studio Deface Gallery didn't make your outside looking in list, and this card did. That's crazy to me.
I'm too low on Painter's Gallery Deface Studio should probably be on this list. Yeah, yeah, that's a good card. And then Arabella Abandoned Doll was the best gold card that I didn't put in the list.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at my list. I had 17 cards that in my first pass of Scryfall that I found. The only card that we haven't mentioned so far that's here. Oh, we actually two cards that we haven't mentioned. Sporogenic Infection, I like a lot.
I like that.
The sort of edict enchantment in black, and Irreverent Gremlin, the 2-mana 2/2 menace in red that any small creature enters, you get to rummage if you want once per turn. I think that card's very good, but just ultimately didn't make the list. A lot of banger on commons.
Did you watch Simon's games?
Yeah.
His Sporogenic Infection was incredible for him. And his opponent blocked into the first striker with the Sporogenic Infection creature. Oh, man. Lord.
I feel like I've been just like off on an island for weeks talking about that card. Like, I draft that on stream or in videos and people are like, what's happening? And like every time I draw it, it's amazing. It just like it's so good. Every time you see it, it's really hard for that card not to be great. So speaking of, shall we talk about Simon's draft?
Let's get into it. Yeah.
Okay. So Simon Nielsen sits down day one, draft one of Worlds, and sees the following cards as option. I cannot wait to talk to you about this pack one, pick one. Commons, he's got a Glasswork Shattered Yard. He's got an Unable to Scream. Uncommons, Break Down the Door, the Naturalize or Manifest for 3 mana. Vile Mutilator, not really in consideration, the black 7-drop. Diversion Specialist, the 4-mana 4/3 menace in red that you can sack stuff to do the like red exile, play it until end of turn thing. And his rare is Reluctant Role Model, the 1 and a white 2/2. If it survives, you can put a +1/+1 flying or lifelink counter on it. And then whenever any creature you control dies, you can dump its counters onto another creature, which I always forget. I always forget when my opponent's playing with this card that like trading with something else with a plus one counter is going to then end up on one of their creatures as well.
Yeah, speaking of that interaction with Reluctant Role Model, I saw a tweet from Alex where patched plaything, if you have -1/-1 counters on it, your Reluctant Role Model will dump those -1/-1 counters on an opposing creature. Have not seen or even come close to thinking about that interaction this format.
It's pretty gnarly. It's pretty gnarly. Reluctant Role Model is very, very good, but it is white.
It is white. I mean, this was shocking to me. I would take Reluctant Role Model, pack one, pick one here. And I'm pretty low on white. I think the thing I wish I could ask Simon was, is this, because Reluctant Role Model says survival on it. And I know everybody's low on survival, but this is just a good card.
That, yes.
And you're going to be playing combat tricks alongside it. And once you get it in once, it can snowball like pretty heavily, unlike Acrobatic Cheerleader or whatever. But I could see looking at this card, well, it's just kind of Acrobatic Cheerleader, and that card's not very good, you know? I want to dive into Simon's brain and think, is this because he thinks this card is like Acrobatic Cheerleader, ergo it is not very good, or is it because he doesn't want to draft white, or is it some combination of the two? Because for me, I would take it because I think this card is powerful, and I would just be kind of bummed that I were drafting white.
But that's the thing. So, I mean, first of all, you should just tweet at Simon, because, like, he likes us and likes our show, and he would happily reply to you. But two, that's my guess, is that this is a nod to not wanting to be white. Because my feeling is similar to you. Is like, I think I would have taken Reluctant Role Model and not been happy. And either been upset about drafting white in this seat, or be easily pushed off of it. And I think both of those are like bad spots to be in. Like, if you're going to take this, you got to be like, oh, great, I've got Reluctant Role Model, this is what I'm drafting, this is what I'm doing. If you're not feeling that way, Simon takes Unable to Scream, which was perhaps the most shocking pick of both drafts to me, honestly.
That is not true for me.
No, I guess, yeah, I can think of one from JED that was quite shocking. But yeah, I was very surprised to see him take Unable to Scream. But I feel like it says a lot about what he and Team Handshake were thinking about doing going into these drafts. Like, this shows an opinion beyond just individual card quality.
For sure. Either that, or they don't have a high opinion of Reluctant Role Model. It could be that as well. Because I think you could make that case that this is kind of like, but what grade would you give Reluctant Role Model right now?
B plus.
Like, I think I would give it a B plus. Yeah. Like, it would be tough for me to not take Reluctant Role Model, but I think I would take it and assume I am drafting white, red, or white, blue. That would be my thought process.
Yes. Right. Yeah. You're not, again, still feeling how we are about like not wanting to draft white, black. And it seemed like both Marshall and Paul were also on this from commentary that like white, green is probably just the worst stat. Like, you just really don't want to draft that.
Correct.
In the format.
Yeah. So taking Unable to Scream here, love it. I mean, I was like, yeah, you too, you. I was applauding.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, pack one, pick two. There's a Monstrous Emergence, the green bite spell. There's a Scorching Dragonfire, red, deal three. Uncommons, Coordinated Clobber, Ben's other favorite bite spell at a single green. Bottomless Pool, actual Ben's favorite bounce spell. Room, Fear of Infinity, the one blue black, 2/2 flying lifelink, can't block, can recur it to your hand with Eerie. And my fave, Painter's Studio, Defaced Gallery, the, you know, 3 mana, look at the top two or exile the top two, and you can play them until the end of your next turn. And Defaced Gallery is 1 and a red for attacking creatures you control get +1/+0.
Yeah, this is interesting here. I think if I had taken Reluctant Role Model, I would be slamming Scorching Dragonfire.
Yes.
If I had started with Unable to Scream like Simon, it's a really hard pick for me between Bottomless Pool and Scorching Dragonfire. And I think I ultimately would have ended up on Bottomless Pool over Scorching Dragonfire.
That does not surprise me to hear you say that, because I know you're how high you are on that card. And not saying you're wrong. I'm just not surprised, but I'm not surprised that Simon took Dragonfire here. Hard for that to be wrong.
Well, but it puts you into a second color. Either that, or you're just like, to me, taking Scorching Dragonfire here says, I really want to be red. Like, more than I want to be blue. Like, I don't mind branching out into a second color here.
Correct. He's not giving, I mean, as we say, like, just not giving weight to Unable to Scream. The common doesn't get weight for him here, and it's, you are giving it a little weight. Because, like, pack one, pick one, you're definitely taking Dragonfire over Bottomless Pool, right?
Yes, per the official world's pick order tier list, yes, I'm taking Dragonfire over Bottomless Pool, but Unable to Scream is my second common, right? And it's, like, fairly close to Scorching Dragonfire, and that's where color preferences start to come in for me.
Yeah, for sure. No, I get that. I just think, like, yeah, Dragonfire is just so good.
Yeah, and I don't think this is wrong, to be clear. No. Like, yeah. I certainly think this is a defensible pick. I just think I would have taken Bottomless Pool over Dragonfire.
Yeah. Pick three with the two removal spells in his pile. There's a blue-green dual land. There's a Bashful Beastie, the 5-mana 5/4 dies Manifest Dread. Uncommons, there's a Cursed Windbreaker, the 3-mana equipment Manifest Dread, equipped creature gets flying. Patchwork Beastie, the single green 3/3 can't attack or block unless you have Delirium, and you may mill one in your upkeep. And Live or Die, the 5-mana, either kill something or reanimate at instant speed.
Yeah, I think clear best card in the pack is Patchwork Beastie. And so for Simon, still trying to feel out his lane here with Unable to Scream, Scorching Dragonfire, I definitely like Patchwork Beastie. I think if I had gone Unable to Scream into Bottomless Pool, I think I would take Cursed Windbreaker over Patchwork Beastie here.
Is Cursed Windbreaker a good card?
It's not a bad card. I would not put my foot down and say it's a good card, but I would definitely say it's not a bad card. In the words
of Tim Walls, that is a damning non-answer, sir. It's not good, though, right? Like, you just...
It can't be good. There's some times when it's great. It's randomly great.
It's randomly great. I just feel like you have no shortage of 3-mana 2/2 opportunities.
But you also have Bottomless Pool, which is one of the spots where it's great. Like, if you unlock a locker room, have a windbreaker on a thing, like, that's not nothing.
It's pretty good. Okay. All right. That's not nothing. You've got an interesting path here, mono blue. Simon does take the Beastie, as you said, to just sort of feel out his lane. And I feel like we should probably move away from Ben's mono blue path just for the sake of our listeners. So he's got a blue card, a red card, and a green card here. Pick four. There's a Fear of Surveillance, the white 2-drop 2/2 Vigi. When it attacks, you surveil one. There's a Final Vengeance, the single black removal spell. There's Rite of the Moth, the black-white reanimate spell with flashback. And another Painter's Studio Defaced Gallery.
Yeah, this is interesting here. I think between Final Vengeance and Painter's Studio, pretty quickly, mm-hmm. I don't think you quite want to branch into your fourth color at this spot in the draft, but... And Painter Studio is probably still just better than Final Vengeance. So I think probably taking Painter Studio, but noting a fourth pick Final Vengeance is not nothing. That's the other thing that we didn't dive into in the commons of our list that I wanted to talk about. Is Final Vengeance just like pulling you into black at this point? Like, you're willing to pick Final Vengeance without cards that go along with it yet, correct?
Right. Well, because you have, as you kind of see from like JED's day 2 draft, like, you don't have to be doing the black-red thing to make Final Vengeance work. He had like a ton of, what are they called? Like Underwater Tunnels, Slimy Aquariums. And those are just rooms that are just, once they're done. And that's fodder for you to sack to your Final Vengeance. I just don't think it's hard, especially the first one, to make that card work.
Right. Yeah.
So yes, Final Vengeance is, as much as I'm letting a common pull me into a color, is pulling me into black.
That just goes against my nature with that type of card historically. Correct. Like, so I really have to make myself make a mental shift to be willing to take Final Vengeance aggressively like that.
Rooms make it a lot easier. And if you're thinking about Sporogenic Infection and to a lesser extent, Cracked Skull has really premium cards. And then they're like, Cracked Skull is not premium, but it's a card that like you can get negligibly on the wheel and then is going to turn that on and probably gets better in these kinds of drafts anyway, just like taking the best thing, you know, if someone's got a scrappier deck, but some bombs, taking that out of their hand can be nice. But yeah, I think this is a pretty clear Painter's Studio as a follow-up to the Dragonfire he took two picks ago. Pick five, there's a Glimmerlight, the equipment. Getting into some lower powered stuff. Tunnel Surveyor, blue 3-drop makes a 1/1, Terramorphic Expanse. And the uncommons, there's a Fear of Being Hunted, the 1 red 4/2 haste has to be blocked. and Sporogenic Infection, the Edict, Enchantment in black.
Yeah, this is a clear fear of being hunted again, because you're looking for a direction at this point. If you're Simon, the packs have been pretty low powered. Fear of being hunted is a signal. It gives you your third red card. That is, all three of these are premium: Scorching Dragon, Fire Painter, Studio Fear of Being Hunted. Like, you'd like the power level to be a little higher, ideally, but you want to lock in at this point. Okay, I am red. Great. Lock me in on that, and I'll stay open to whatever my second color is going to be in pack two. But along with taking Fear of Being Hunted here, I'd be noting the Sporogenic Infection, and this is now back-to-back packs you've gotten past a premium black card. Like, would you like to be able to take Sporogenic Infection here over Fear of Being Hunted? Probably. Like, you're just not in a position to be able to do so, but while you're feeling out what your second color might be, you're noting that black is flowing from your right.
I really am looking for any reason to not take Fear of Being Hunted. I can't quite come up with a good one. I just don't really like this card very much anymore. Like, it's fine, and I agree with you. Like, getting deeper into a color is worth it, but I'm like, can I justify taking Glimmerlight here? Can I justify taking Terramorphic Expanse here?
I don't think you can.
I don't think you can, but like, this card is not like the whole, this is, I mean, it's a preview for 50 takes, whenever that is, if it's next week, 2 weeks from now, but like, the Fear of Being Hunted Most Valuable Slayer thing that like everyone was excited about week one, it's like fine, but those two cards are extremely greater than the sum of their parts. Like, I'm not really excited about either of those cards anymore.
I agree. Fear of Being Hunted's like, it's like a C plus or something. Maybe yeah. A C, but it, yeah. Like, if you're a dedicated red aggressive deck, it's powerful. Randomly insane sometimes when your opponent plays like the green 04 or whatever.
Play Paranormal Analyst and you eat it. Yeah.
And more than anything else, it's also two types for this Patchwork Beastie you also have. Like, it's a good card that is two types for the red-green deck. You can't take anything over Fear of Being Hunted here.
I agree. I'm just saying, I'd like to, if possible. Pick six, he takes a Smoky Lounge, Misty Salon, the blue-red room over really nothing. I think the other card, I don't even know what it's called, but like the green 4-mana 4/4 survival, gain 2 life. Like, there was, this pack was extremely weak, and I assume he's taking Smoky Lounge and not giving it much weight. Like, he does have Painter Studio, he does have Unable to Scream, but I got the sense that blue red was kind of a maligned archetype, much like green white was.
Yeah, I mean, you're happy to pick it up here out of a weak pack just to keep an avenue open, but I think it's a path you're hoping to not have to go down.
Well, again, and he's just looking for ceilings. Like, he's got reasonable floors of cards, right? Unable to Scream, Scorching Dragonfire, Painter Studio. And so Smoky Lounge gives him a possible ceiling, and seeing it pick six is not like, it's not crazy to think that that means blue-red is open at the table.
Right.
Pick seven. There's a Bedhead Beastie, the red mana cycler, 5/6 menace. There's a Pyroclasm, deal 2 to all creatures. There's a Fear of Lost Teeth, single black 1/1 enchantment. When it dies, ping something. And Winter's Intervention, 2-mana, deal 2, gain 2 in black.
This is an interesting pick, and I think a really cool pick. You could say, like, get deeper into red, take Bedhead Beastie, take Pyroclasm for the sideboard. You know, you're playing best of three. It has a chance to be a really strong card. I like Fear of Lost Teeth here as a nod to, I'm looking for my second color. I've seen Final Vengeance and Sporogenic Infection picks 4 and 5. Like, my cards that I have, my red cards that I have, would do well in a low curve red black deck. Fear of Lost Teeth is an important piece to the red black deck. I like starting to hedge into red black here.
Yeah, over a sort of nothing burger in my mind in Bedhead Beastie. That's the other option, right? To like, delay the decision, get deeper into red, etc.
Yeah, but like, ultimately, Bedhead Beastie is not going to make or break your draft, and not having Fear of Lost Teeth, if you do end up red-black, could make or break your draft.
Yeah, I agree. Rounding out the pack here, pick 8, he gets a blue-red land. On the wheel, pick 9, he gets a Ragged Playmate, the 2-mana 2/2 in red artifact creature that like pays 1, tap, makes something unblockable. That's a nice pickup for him.
Yeah, you're thrilled to see that on the wheel, like, because I would be worried about red being pretty contested at the world's level, and like, seeing Ragged Playmate on the wheel would be like, okay, great. Plus, it also gives you your second artifact for the Patchwork Beastie if you're going red green like, just a great pickup.
And then he does get a Winter's Intervention pick 10, the deal 2. A Turn Inside Out pick 11 is awesome for him, the +3/+0 if the creature dies, manifest. Ripchin Razorkin, pick 12, the 5/3 reach, and Baleful Leech, the black 2 drop, Eerie. I always think this drains, but it doesn't. It just, they lose a life. That's it. So Eerie, lose a life. And then a swamp, pick 14. Swamp, pick 14, signal that black's open?
I don't think so. But just looking at these picks, so you've got Unable to Scream, Dragonfire, Patchwork Beastie, Painter Studio, Fear of Being Hunted, Smoky Lounge, Fear of Lost Teeth, and then some more red filler. You're essentially mono red with feelers out into blue, green, and black. I wonder if Simon wishes he took the reluctant role model at the end of pack one, because that was what I was thinking. I was thinking initially I wouldn't have done it. I would have taken reluctant role model. And I think I would have been happy having reluctant role model at the end of pack one, the way his pack one played out. But then if you have reluctant role model, I don't know if you're still going to make feelers. I think I would have let reluctant role model like juke me into not drafting red black. Which is where Simon ends up.
I agree. That's what I'm saying is I think you would have I would have drafted it and not been happy. And it's tough to know because the cards that Simon didn't pull any white cards to the front. So I'm only listing cards that seemed like he was considering slash maybe a card or two that stuck out to me as I was watching the draft. There aren't white cards here. Fear of Surveillance is the only one.
Yeah, white wasn't very open. It definitely felt like somebody near him was in white or white blue pretty heavily. And black did seem to be flowing. I think it might have train wrecked my draft. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because everything is so flat. It's hard to jump ship for it or from it, right? You're not getting a signal here. And so you're probably good. It is ostensibly, especially if you think it's better than the commons, if you think role model's better than Dragonfire or Painter Studio, it's the best card you see, the whole pack one. So of course you're going to give it weight.
That's why I'm so curious to see what he feels. So I'll tweet at him. I'm so curious to see if he feels like it's a not wanting to draft white thing or the intrinsic power level of reluctant role model if we're too high on it or if I'm too high on it.
So with, getting deep into red, feelers into basically just black, though he's got the Patchwork Beastie as a feeler into green. Unable to Scream as a feeler into blue, but that was his first pick, and then no blue cards past that other than the Smoky Lounge Misty Salon. Pack two, a pretty clear Irreverent Gremlin for him over Oblivious Bookworm. Charred Foyer was his mythic. Unfortunately, not going to take that there. That's the mythic room that four mana is the draw spell. Exile the top card of your library. You can play it this turn, and then six mana is once each turn you can play a card from exile for zero. But yeah, Irreverent Gremlin is an awesome pickup here for him. Obviously he'd like something maybe a little more powerful, but a top uncommon in your color is nice.
Yeah.
Then he gets past Razorkin Needlehead, the red 2/2 has first strike on your turn. And when your opponent draws a card, it deals a damage to them. Getting deeper into red, getting more aggressive. This is great, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Love it.
And then pick three is a big decision time. He has the choice between Scorching Dragonfire number 2 and Disturbing Mirth, the red-black enchantment. When it enters, you can sack something if you do draw 2, and then when you sacrifice it, you manifest Dread.
This is where I think Reluctant Role Model would have train-wrecked my draft. Because I think if I had Reluctant Role Model, I would have largely taken the same path as Simon through pack 1, except for having a Reluctant Role Model instead of an Unable to Scream. But I think if I have Reluctant Role Model and I'm putting the weight on it that I have mentally, whether correctly or incorrectly, I think I would lead me to take Scorching Dragonfire here over Disturbing Mirth, despite I would have clocked the Final Vengeance and the Sporogenic Infection in pack 1, I think. But I don't think I would have been brave enough to take Disturbing Mirth here over Dragonfire if I had Reluctant Role Model.
Now, I gotta say, I was expecting you, even without the role model pick, I was expecting you, I didn't know where you were. I was expecting you to perhaps think that taking Dragonfire here was correct, even with Simon's path.
With Simon's path, I still think I would have taken Dragonfire. I don't think I would have had, I don't think I would have had the guts to take Disturbing Mirth, even with Simon's path. Yeah.
Okay, so because I love, so Simon does take the Mirth here.
I love the pick.
I love the pick.
I'm sure you would make the same pick as well.
I would.
I don't have as much experience with black-red to, I think, be comfortable making this pick in such a high leverage spot. Despite, thinking that, red-black's probably where he should end up, I like the pick. I just don't know if I could have done it in the heat of battle.
You're also going to, in the world where you take the role model, you're also going to get a good deck in a couple picks, which is what makes this middle of pack two so interesting. So Simon decides, I think that like to step inside his head a little bit, certainly you could tweet at him and he would, you know, have a better insight into what he was thinking. But I feel like he knows what his base color is. He knows he's red and he is looking desperately for a direction and had sprinklings, as you said, of saw the Final Vengeance, saw the Sporogenic Infection, got the Fear of Lost Teeth 7th, got Winner's Intervention 10th. I think all of that adds up to disturbing. Like, if you're hashtag delaying the decision, what is it for? If not for a pick three in pack two, disturbing Mirth, when you've already got feelers into black.
Yeah. I mean, and this is a masterclass in delaying the decision, like picking up on some muddy signals in pack one that aren't the clearest, but are there. And then just getting paid off in pack three. And now you might make this decision and not always get paid off in pack three, but he set himself up to get lucky and then did, which is so beautiful.
Correct. So the there's something interesting that happens two picks later. So pick four, he gets a Sporogenic Infection, which is just chef's kiss after getting the Disturbing Mirth. But then pick five, he does see a Midnight Mayhem, which I think like there's a lot of like, if I had taken Scorching Dragonfire, then I could take Midnight Mayhem here and swing back to red white. But once he makes the Disturbing Mirth pick, because I was talking to some folks in the Discord about this as well, I was like, whoa, I can't believe he ends up taking Violent Urge over Midnight Mayhem here. Pick five, which is the single red, plus one, plus zero, and first strike. And if you have Delirium, it gets double strike instead. Once you make the Disturbing Mirth pick, you can't take Mayhem here, I don't think. Because like when you do, what's the plan? Are you going to keep waffling keep waffling and have no deck? Going to keep waffling and be Mardu, going to decide to be Mayhem and throw away the Mirth pick. Like, I don't think any of those are good of options personally. And I think I probably would have taken Impossible Inferno. I'm not a huge fan of Violent Urge, but Violent Urge did end up cheesing out a game or two for Simon.
Well, and also, I'm curious as to your thoughts on this. I'm probably still too low on Midnight Mayhem, like 6 weeks into the format or however far we are in here. But I would rather have a Disturbing Mirth and be on track for Red Black than I would rather have Reluctant Role Model and Midnight Mayhem.
It's more about Midnight Mayhem appearing fifth, plus I'm not jazzed about any of the other cards. If this is Arabella, like the conversation is much different for me still. So I'm still where I was weeks ago when I was like, I don't really get the love for Midnight Mayhem. I think Arabella is better. Still feel that way. But Midnight Mayhem is good and certainly signal it. It's certainly a signal here.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's a little dicey for him as the pack ends is like pick eight. There's a veteran survivor, the white one drop 2/1. Pick nine, he grabs an acrobatic cheerleader. So like, I feel like what doesn't end up working out for him in this pack is like is the Disturbing Mirth pick, but then it works out in spades in pack three.
Yeah, opens up a terrible pack with Turn Inside Out as his pack one, pick one, which you're super bummed about if you're Simon. But then this is where he gets paid off for reading that Red Black was open to his right, despite some kind of weak signals. Gets an Undead Sprinter, pick two, slams it. That's the 2/2 zombie that if a non-zombie creature died this turn, you can cast it out of your graveyard and it comes into play with a +1/+1 counter on it. It's got haste. Card's ridiculous. Pick three, gets a Final Vengeance. Pick four, gets another Undead Sprinter. Pick five, gets another Final Vengeance, picks up a couple of ticket booths to sack to his Final Vengeances, to bin his Undead Sprinters. And yep. the Undead Sprinters were not shy in the gameplay, and he crushed with his deck. It was a very low curve. Like, I think his curve stopped at three. It was a very low curve, red-black deck. Got a late Vicious Clown at the end of pack three, then ended up making the cut as well. Had triple Fear of Lost Teeth, which I assume he was not thrilled about, but just needed a creature count a little higher. And that's where the Painter's Studio Defaced Gallery, you know, that makes the Fear of Lost Teeth a lot more palatable if those are attacking his 2/1s.
Plus, he's got double Turn Inside Out. Like, the Fear of Lost Teeth are, like, fine here. Would he rather they were, like, he has three fears, one Clockwork Percussionist. Would he rather those numbers were flipped? Absolutely. But, like, they do work here.
Yeah, but the double Undead Sprinter bailed him out hard in pack three. But also, he was set up such in pack three that if he saw white bombs, he could have gone red white. Like, he really truly got, like, if he opens the white overlord, he's taking white overlord and playing red white in pack three. Like, he was still pretty open, I think, to white as an avenue as well. And I think blue and green were cut in pack one. Ultimately, he ended up in the right place per the signals in pack one and got paid off for it, which you love to see.
Yeah, I mean, you said masterclass, and I think that's exactly what this is. I loved watching this draft. And I was really, and like, also as a fan of red black, I was selfishly happy that he did get paid off for hedging with Disturbing Mirth. And ultimately, he did, spoiler, 3-0 his draft pod. You love to see it.
Not only did he 3-0 this draft pod, he also 3-0'd his day two draft pod. He was the only 6-0 drafter at Worlds.
Is that true? I saw that he 6-0'd. I didn't know he was the only one who 6-0'd.
I think that's true. I think he was the only 6-0 drafter at Worlds, yeah.
God, what a beast.
What a beast. Unfortunately, missed out on top eight thanks to Constructed getting him finally, but thrilled to see this performance for him in Limited.
He's got to let someone else get a dub every now and then, right?
Keep it fun. Keep the competition flowing.
Come on. We got to take her. I'm teaching Jonah about sharing, taking turns. Simon, let someone else take a turn, you know?
All right. Who do you want in the top eight? Who's your pick? It's got to be Kai, right?
Yeah,
it's
such a good story. How do you not go for Kai? It's so funny because, like, you know, the meme of, like, anytime someone's like, well, it's my last tournament coming up for a while, so we'll see how it goes. And then they win it. Like, I feel like Kai, air quotes, retiring from Magic earlier this year and then just being like, oops, top eight Worlds also.
Just kidding.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Really, really good stuff. I'm excited to watch the top eight play out this afternoon. Are you going to watch any Constructed, or are you just gonna check the standings?
I will just be checking the standings, most likely. I'm gonna go listen to the Dolphins game on the radio this afternoon.
Yeah,
but Worlds is done for me. I had all the FOMO happened on Friday and Saturday.
That makes sense.
Speaking of, did you watch the Vintage Cube Rotisserie draft?
I did. That's right. I was gonna have us do that, and then I was like, oh wait, I thought it was actually a draft. No, it's a rotisserie draft. That'd be tough for us to try and recap here, but I did watch it. Did you?
I also watched it. Yeah, the Jacobovitz family cleaned up.
They're eating well. Yeah. They walked away with 6 of 9 pieces of power, I believe.
Is that true?
I believe
so. Like, after they finally picked the winnings? I fell asleep last night. I woke up this morning and saw that, was it Luca that won?
Yeah, the son won. Yeah. I mean, he had Ancestral, Time Walk, Spellseeker to go find them.
He had Mox.
Mox, right, yeah.
and then the dad opened Black Lotus. It's going to feel great.
Yeah. It was really fun. I was thinking about it because as I was watching it unfold, I was like, oh, this is so sick. Like, I hope they like do this again or whatever. And then after it was done, I was like, I actually don't know if I do. Like, it feels kind of like when the beta draft happened a few years back. And I was like, oh man, are they going to like keep doing that? And they didn't. Like, makes it feel so much more special. Like, I hope they find ways to iterate on it. But it's also weird that it's a very high stakes tournament where the draft felt more, the draft is where the stakes are, because that's where you're opening the money. I mean, yes, you're playing for then the pick order to get whatever the scraps of the Vintage Cube, which are probably still worth, you know, a couple like 10-20k, I don't know, but like the real money is in the oops, did I open Lotus?
Well, but also just doing it as a rotisserie draft was genius for viewing, for the excitement of cracking the packs as well. Also,
I was expecting it to take a long time.
Commenting on his stream and just knowing what everyone was drafting and able to fill you in the whole way was just chef's kiss. Thanks, Luis.
Yeah. Thank you, Luis and BK, for doing that. That is definitely how I digested that draft as well. So much exciting stuff that the addendum to this episode is is the Vintage Cube Rotisserie draft.
All right. Anything else before we go?
No, I think we should say that we're going to like do things in a slightly weird order the next coming weeks. I think we'll plan to do the Foundations Crash Course next week, even though that will then give us a gap week before it goes live. There's no early access event on Arena, so we won't have like our usual sort of like half a dozen drafts each to sort of update things. So I think we'll do Crash Course next week, Then we'll wrap up Duskmourn with 50 takes and then dive into Foundations the following
for 2 weeks and then have Pioneer Masters.
2 weeks, Pioneer Masters, maybe some Cube, whatever. No shortage of sets. I bring it on, I say. I'm ready. I want it.
I would like a little bit less and a little more thought and quality to go into the design of the sets, but who knows?
Hey, all right, great place. If there are more Duskmourns on our future, I think we're happy to see them.
Well, for sure. This format was so good. I would keep drafting this format for another month, another 2 months. It's so good. All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. We've got our tier list. We've got our episode backlog. We've got links to our YouTube channel. Please head on over there, like and subscribe, and get all of our great content. We finally got it. We did it. The mob won. Ben dropped a video on the YouTube channel this past week. Fans rejoiced. You can check that out there. You can also find our Twitch streams, our merch courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page, of course, all of that at lordsoflimited.com.
If you got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.